Good morning. May it please the court and opposing counsel. My name is Suzanne Mincer, by registration number 36795, and I represent the appellant Westfield Insurance Company in this matter. With me at counsel table is a colleague from my firm, Henry Solano. At the outset, I'd like to reserve approximately 4 minutes for purposes of rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor. We're here today because Westfield requests this court to reverse and remand the district court's decision that found there was coverage for an entity called RPS LLC under an insurance policy issued to Newfern Inc. There are three main reasons why the district court should be reversed. The first and primary reason is that the law of contracts and the law of corporations provide us with certain presumptions on which we are able to construe the face of the policy. Ms. La Liberté's position and the evidence in support of that position are not sufficient to overcome these presumptions as a matter of law. The second point for basis of reversal is that even if this court concludes that the policy does cover RPS, Ms. La Liberté is not entitled to recover in excess of policy limits for a couple of reasons. First, the policy's clear language provides that Westfield does not have liability in excess of policy limits. Second, this was a garnishment case in which a tort claim and an assignment of rights under the policy is not at issue. Finally, the Colorado Supreme Court's decision in Old Republic v. Ross is determinative of the excess of limits issue.
The judgment she recovered was within the policy limits, correct? The primary judgment?
I believe the judgment, yes, was within limits. I believe the judgment.
So the only issue about going over the limits has to do with the pre-judgment or post-judgment interest.
Correct, Your Honor.
And the policy has a provision that specifically applies that the company will pay pre-judgment interest, subparagraph F, I think it is, post-judgment interest, subparagraph G. And these limits do not, the limits do not apply to these payment amounts. Doesn't it say that right in the policy?
I believe the policy language says that we'll pay the interest that's within our applicable limits, and that's on the policy, basically it was page 74, Your Honor. The third basis for reversal is that if this court reverses the district court's finding on coverage, the award of attorney's fees must also be reversed because there would be no judgment on which to support the award of attorney's fees. Related to that, if this court reverses the district court's decision, Westfield respectfully requests its fees on appeal by analogy because if it had been successful in defending the garnishment, it would have been entitled to recover under Rule 103. Now, before we started, the court directed counsel to go straight to the law. And with the court's permission, I'd like to give the court a framework, the historical context of this matter. This is a case where an insurance company did what it was supposed to do. It defended Newfern and paid a settlement to Ms. La Liberté on behalf of Newfern, the entity that Westfield thinks is its policyholder and the entity that thinks it's Westfield's policyholder. So Ms. La Liberté has already recovered a payment under this policy and now would like to do an end run around the law of contracts and the law of corporations to recover a second time, even though she released her ability to prove that Newfern and RPS were the same entity. Now going back to the policy, Newfern became the insured effective February 10th, 2006.
On the comprehensive liability coverage?
Yes, sir. Under the it's important to keep in mind that the policy is a package policy with several different coverage parts. There's a general liability coverage part, the umbrella coverage part, auto, property. It's a package policy. So the amended common policy declarations came out on January 23rd, 2006, which post-date the declarations dated December 14th. So this is, the policy must be construed as a whole. So these changes went into effective February 10th, 2006. That's 6 months before plaintiff sustained her injury on August 1st, 2006. So this is not a case where the insured was changed in order to avoid liability for an event that had already taken place. In her answer brief, Ms. La Liberté raised the question of the Embry case that was in California for the proposition that Westfield and Newfern considered Newfern and RPS to be one and the same. Within the context of the Embry case, it's important to remember that that took place in May 2006, 3 months before plaintiff sustained her injury. And in that case, Westfield again defended New Fern, which is the same entity in this case. Plaintiff claims that that case is evidence that Westfield and New Fern considered RPS and New Fern to be the same, except the entity in question in the Embry case in California was an entity called RPA, which is a third entity. And so that evidence is insufficient to prove that New Fern and Westfield considered them to be one and the same.
Counsel, do you agree that we have to construe this policy as to whether it applies to RPS or not?
I believe what we have is the face of the policy that has to be construed, and we have the law, contracts, and corporations telling us how to construe
the policy. Let me tell you what my problem is. I don't know what policy exactly you're talking about, okay? So I have a question.
Sure.
When you file a motion to supplement the record, you attach an Exhibit A, and you claim that this is the entire policy, correct? When you filed a reply to the traverse in the court below, you filed an Exhibit A, and you claim that this was the policy. Both are based on policy 00001 through about 178. When you filed the response to the traverse, it contains a certification on the cover from a Wilma Padnick, supervisor of policy. She says, I certify that the foregoing copy was prepared under my supervision and to the best of my knowledge and belief is a true and correct copy of the policy with an effective date of 8/4/06. Can we rely on this document that was filed in response to the in reply to the traverse that you filed?
Yes, Your Honor. Both okay. That policy and the copy of the policy that was submitted as Addendum A on our amended
are the same?
Opening brief are the same.
Then tell me why that certification is missing from the document that was filed as a supplement to the record. The page is there, but the certification appears to be whited out. Can you explain that, counsel?
That must be an error in submission of the exhibit, and I apologize for that. I did not realize that. The certification page is the same, and I can...
All right, I will rely on the one that was filed in reply to the traverse, okay?
Well, and also I think we need to, the issue on the record is, Westfield did file a motion to supplement the record on appeal. The district court found in Westfield's favor on that. Plaintiff did not challenge or seek relief in this court, and in fact, in footnote 4 of her answer brief, conceded that that was not determinative of this case.
It's all good. I just wanted to know why that certification. I'm going to rely on that certification being part of the record because it is part of the brief. It's part of the document that was filed in reply, in your reply in support of the motion for leave to file reply to traverse.
Thank okay? you, Your Honor.
All right, please go ahead.
So with that framework in mind, I think it's important to note that Westfield and New Fern's coverage position has been consistent since 2006. This is not a new position that they took in this case in order to deprive plaintiff to recover on her judgment. So with that background in mind, I'd like to turn to the legal basis for reversal.
Let me ask you a question before we go. Is it the opponent's position that New Fern and RPS are the same entity?
It's my understanding of her position is that's correct, Your Honor, is that her position is that I don't think that there's a dispute that New Fern is the named insured under the policy. The question is whether RPS is also covered.
I understand, and the question I have, and maybe I have more for opposing counsel, is if they are the same entity, why in the settlement would New Fern cover the whole litigation with respect to RPS if they are the same entity?
Well, Your Honor, I think in that regard, it's plaintiff, notably, she did have successor liability claims against as to New Fern to have successor liability for this entity called RPS. And in that settlement, that was fully released when she released her claims against New Fern. So within the context of this case, that is a decided question, and they are not, in fact, there's a presumption of corporate law that an LLC and an incorporated entity are distinct as a matter of law. And the evidence that plaintiff has submitted in connection with that.
They're not the same entity then?
They are not the same entity. In fact, the district court's order recognized that when Judge Montgomery said, in fact, New Fern and RPS are not the same entity.
But are they successors of each other? Is New Fern a successor of RPS?
No, they are not. That has not been proven. And the facts, there's nothing in the record that has shown that New Fern is the successor, corporate successor to RPS, because plaintiffs settled that ability to prove that, Your Honor. Because the policy is a contract, the first place we look in determining who is covered is the face of the policy.
Okay, page 2 of the document says this policy has been especially designed for RPS LLC. Sounds like they're the insured.
I think it's important to note that...
That's the page after Ms. Pagnick's certification.
Correct, Your Honor. And an insurance policy is not only a contract, but it's a historical ongoing document. And what I mean by that is the policy comes out. So on December 14th, Westfield offers to renew RPS's previous coverage for the 2005 to 2006 policy period. Silence is not acceptance. RPS never indicates to Westfield that they would like to maintain coverage for the 06 to 07 policy period.
The premium paid?
RPS paid a premium for the 05 to 06 policy, Your Honor, but not for the 06 to 07 policy period.
The premium paid by somebody?
The premium was paid by New Fern for the 06 to 07
policy period. Is there any law that says RPS as the insured must pay the policy premium?
I think there are certainly examples, Your Honor, of entities that can qualify as insureds without having to pay the premium. For example, just anecdotally based on my coverage experience, there are often additional insureds who qualify because of a contract with the named insured. However, in order to qualify as an insured, we always have to go back to the policy language. Here,
look at page 26 of the policy. It says commercial property declarations insured RPS. Can't we read that as saying RPS is insured under the commercial liability declaration?
Your Honor, I think your question goes back to my previous point, which is that those declarations you're referring to are dated December 14th, 2005, and those pages are in the record.
Ms. Pagnick says in certification, this is the policy. And they're not taken out of this document, and the reader would read them and say, according to her certification, this is the policy. Aren't we entitled to trust her certification?
As a matter of law, I think that the Martinez
You're
decision...
You're down to about 3 minutes, but
Thank you, Your Honor.
I can see I'm going to have to add some time, but go ahead.
As a matter of law, the Martinez decision tells us that the latter expression of intent controls. So the declarations that were issued on January 23rd listing New Fern Inc. as the named insured control as the latter expression of intent over the declarations dated December 14th. As for their intrinsic evidence to the contract itself, when the policy term was extended to February 20th, the endorsement extending the expiration date was sent to New Fern Inc., not to RPS.
Anything issued in January regarding the general liability declarations? The general liability declarations on page 64 list RPS as the insured. I don't see anywhere in the record substitute, replacement, amendment, whatever you want to call them, substitute for the general liability declaration. There are none, are there?
So you're correct, Your Honor.
So if the latter control, there's nothing latter to control the liability declaration.
And that point goes to my previous point about, your question goes to my previous point, Your Honor, about the policy is one package policy with these different coverage parts. The January 23rd decks are the common decks that apply to the policy as a whole. If the district court's decision is correct, the New Fern Inc. is the insured under the policy as a whole, the property and the auto, and RPS is the insured under the general liability and the umbrella, and that does not make sense within the context of this document.
They're both insured under the common policy, they're both insured under the property, and RPS is insured under the liability and the umbrella.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I think the January 23rd, 2006 decks show the intent to cover just New Fern only, as does Mr. Krawchuk's affidavit, which is uncontroverted in the record.
That declaration page wasn't in the policy you submitted supplementing the record.
It is in the policy, Your Honor. It's the policy basically, the number is policy 107 to 158, I believe. It's in the middle of the policy.
If we have to go to the affidavit, doesn't it suggest there's an ambiguity?
I think there's three levels. I think we first start...
Well, how about answering the question? Does that suggest there's an ambiguity?
Yeah, well, no, I don't think there is an ambiguity, but if there is.
Why would we look at the affidavit unless there's some ambiguity?
Because the law tells us if there's an ambiguity, the next step we go to is the party's intent.
Well, I thought in the insurance context, they deviate that rule and they don't make it a question of fact for the party's intent. But if there's an ambiguity, I thought they did almost a default rule of, tie goes in favor of the insured.
Well, the fundamental question first to that is, who is the insured? And I think we have to get there first. And in this case, that's what this panel is here to decide. And there is no Colorado case saying that the rule of strict construction and the rule in favor of coverage of the insured applies to a third party who is not part of the contract. And with that, my time is up. So thank you.
Bailiff, add 2 minutes back for the appellant and add 2 minutes to the appellee. You don't have to use it all, sir. Give it to you.
Thomas Roberts for the appellee, and with me at council table is Stephanie Selden, who tried the garnishment in the default matter, and Anthony Milanakis. And Judge Richman, I do believe that the question here is whether RPS is covered under this policy. That is the question. And whether they're separate or independent of each other, I don't think matters. It's a question whether this is a contract of insurance that existed. Nobody disputes that.
Let me ask you a question. You say whether they're separate or independent of each other doesn't matter. Well, if they settled with one entity and it is not separate or independent of the other, if it is coexisting with the other, why isn't there a final judgment and no other remedy against the other entity?
Because they did not settle with RPS.
No. Didn't they settle with Newfern?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so if they settled with the same entity, Newfern or RPS, if Newfern is RPS, why isn't that settlement finding that there's no other further remedy against RPS?
Your Honor, the offer of judgment was offered only on behalf of Newfern. It was accepted, and the stipulation of dismissal of Newfern, which appears on page 2802 in the CD, states that this stipulation does not include or apply to plaintiff's claims against RPS LLC. They were expressly exempt from that, and the issue of successor liability was not litigated.
Thank you, counsel.
You're welcome. So the underlying default judgment, of course, on liability and damages was never appealed, so that's final. There's no question about it. And as I said, there was a valid contract in existence in 2006 to 2007, and the question is whether RPS was an insured under it. And we believe that the trial court issued a very careful and comprehensive opinion and noted a number of things supporting her conclusion that RPS was indeed insured on this policy and therefore, excuse me.
Front declaration page for the policy that was in existence, that was in effect on the date of the injury. Who is the named insured on that declaration page?
RPS. RPS is the named insured on both liability coverage parts, the general liability.
I'm talking about the general declaration for the policy. I'm not talking about internal language in the contract. I'm talking about the declaration issued by Westview for that policy when it was purchased or renewed. I don't remember the date, but sometime in early 2007.
Well, are you referring to the common declarations, Your Honor?
Yes.
All right. They said those common declarations did in fact say Newfern. Okay. But let me point something out.
Did that include the general liability and the umbrella coverages?
No.
They're not listed on that deck page?
They're listed for a change of address and a change of name, and I think a change of rate for the property coverage because it was moved to a different location, a warehouse or something like that.
So the current declaration page, for the overall declaration page for the policy, lists New Fern and lists coverages for the general liability and umbrella.
It does not in that express fashion. It lists New Fern as a named insured, and it does say they're common declarations, and then it says change of name, address. It mentions general liability. It mentions, you know, changes that were made to that. But there is nothing in this record of the policy deleting RPS as an insured on that coverage. And I want to point out one thing that I think is.
You're relying on the fact that it was not deleted as an insured.
Yes.
Not the fact that the current declaration page doesn't name it as an insured.
I'm sorry, that
our declaration page does not name it as an insured.
Does not name RPS. That's correct.
Okay.
The specific liability parts do name RPS, and RPS was never stricken by endorsement.
And that's not adequately explained by the fact that for some reason that escapes me, that Westview continues to roll these policies over even when the named insured changes. I apparently continue to use the same contract form
right. That
has references to previous insureds when it issues a new declaration page naming somebody else's insured.
Right.
And you're relying on the internal language.
Yes, and important to note is the 2005 to 06 policy. If you look at the common declaration pages on that and compare it to the common declaration pages on the 2006-07, they are identical. And this is discussed in our brief, I believe, beginning at page 24.
Identical to which? After the amended declaration or before?
No, they're identical. The declaration pages for those policies are identical. And Westfield has admitted that RPS had coverage under the 05-06 policy.
Right, but then they sent out an amended declaration page for the common policy cover, right?
Right.
The common policy declaration for 05-06 only listed RPS. It didn't list New Fern and RPS, did it?
No, that's incorrect, Your
Honor. Oh, okay. I will have to go look at that. I'm sorry.
And
I'll trust you. I trust you, sir. I just hadn't actually looked at that. I'm surprised to hear that.
Let me give you a record reference for your 2139 is the one for the policy 0607, and I thought I had the earlier one. But important to note in this regard is that Westfield, 2456 is the other one. And I have extra copies should the court, okay. So Westfield has admitted in this brief and below that RPS was covered under the 0506 policy, even though that was changed to add New Fern on the common declarations as an insured.
And that's true for the policy at the time of the accident?
Yes.
Then why are we here?
I'm sorry.
Then why are we here? If they agree they insured RPS at the time of the accident or injury, why are we here?
That's an excellent question, Your Honor. They agreed to that, and they say, well, it would be disingenuous to say that there was no coverage for RPS under the 0506 policy because it paid the premium.
The accident didn't happen in 0506.
No, it happened in August of 2006, so it was under the 0607 policy.
So the only difference is who paid the premium between those 2 years?
Yes, sir. That's the only difference. And there is no requirement that somebody, to be an insured on an insurance policy, you have to be the payer of the premium. That's just not the law.
When the declarations were submitted, I think late January.
Correct.
So the common policy declarations, and as to the commercial liability declarations, the commercial property, but not as to the commercial liability and not as to the umbrella.
That is correct.
So that seems to suggest a scenario, as counsel points out, that New Fern is the common policy insured, the property insured, but not the commercial liability insured and not the umbrella liability insured. What's your explanation of, or your response to that position?
Well, my response to it is that the fact is that Westfield defended New Fern in the Boulder action, defended him in the California action, and an insurance company, for what reasons of its own, business reasons or otherwise, are welcome to defend somebody, even if it's questionable whether they're insured under that coverage or not.
We have to decide here whether the trial court correctly concluded that RPS is the insured. And it does seem to me what you're suggesting is that we have to find RPS is the insured under the liability and umbrella section of the policy, and it's not very clear who's insured under the property and the common policy declarations.
The property coverage is clear. That's New Fern. And that's because New Fern bought the property of RPS and became the owner and therefore had the insurance.
Is there some rationale why they would want both RPS and New Fern to continue as the insurance?
By business reason? Sure. And also, the court did not find that only RPS was insured on this policy. She found that RPS wasn't insured on the policy.
Along with New Fern?
Right.
Okay.
And policies can have as many named insureds as you want. I mean, there's no exclusion. You have one named insured and one named insured only.
Ask you another question about the law.
Sure.
I understand the case law. We are to construe ambiguous insurance policies against the insurer and in favor of the insured when they're ambiguous. Assuming this is ambiguous and we can apply that rule, do we have an issue here in that the insured, according to your theory, was RPS, not Mrs. Laliberte? Do we still apply that rule when a non-party to the insurance policy is asserting the benefit of that rule of construction?
I believe we do. I'll tell you what, the no action clause in the policy, which is on page 2057.
Step number?
Pardon? The CD. 2057. And it's policy section 4, conditions, and it's number 3, legal action against us. And it states that a person may sue us, i.e. Westfield, to recover on a final judgment against an insurer. And so, Ms.
Is a person a defined term? Is person a defined term?
No, it says person or organization. So person, I assume, to be a natural person.
So, that's not a defined term.
I don't believe so.
In the policy.
I'd have to...
I don't... We'll look at it.
All right. Ms. Laliberte, the plaintiff, was a statutory assignee of the insured, was permitted to sue under the policy language itself, since she had a final judgment against an insured she contended wasn't insured, and then in the garnishment proceeding, that was litigated. So I think she has every right that it does make sense that any ambiguity should be resolved in her favor.
I have to say, we're not liable for damage that are not payable under the terms of coverage, so we still have to get the coverage. But
that means they're not liable for bad faith or excess cover or damages. They're just...
We have the privilege of having two cases before us right now, this one and another one, involving who's the named insured based upon policy documents. So we're very interested in your opinion on on these matters.
One point to be made is the DC Concrete case. The panel of this court held that there was an ambiguity there, and it was resolved in favor of one insured. They determined who was insured by resolution of an ambiguity. Westfield cited some cases that are quite old in which courts have held that you do not apply that principle of resolving ambiguities in favor of the insured when you're dealing with the identity of the insured. But if you look at our footnote, I believe it's footnote 11, most of those cases have been, if not overruled, dismissed as persuasive, and only the state of New Mexico follows that rule now. And so we have DC Concrete in Colorado, and the Texas courts backed off the decision that was emphasized by Westfield. And there are two or three others that you'll find in the footnote.
Let me ask you this. The rule that we construe an ambiguous contract, insurance contract, in favor of the insured, is that a rule of last resort, or is that, I mean, once you find it ambiguous, do you go immediately with that rule, or do you try to resolve the ambiguity first with the normal rules of construction?
Well, I think normally it is a rule of last resort, but in the cases and the decisions are not all that clear. There are many cases that say once you find an ambiguity, you resolve it in favor of coverage, period. Another way of saying that, you resolve it against the insurer, which is just a correlative of the same principle.
Resolve it against the insurer because there's an ambiguity in the drafting of it?
Yes.
Or do we resolve it, or do we resolve it against the insurer because there's a disproportionality of economic power between insurers and insurers?
Well, that's always a consideration when you're dealing with an insurance company, and policies are to be given heightened scrutiny because of their special nature and the special nature of relationships and so on. But
here in DC Concrete, it's just the ambiguity in the language is construed against the draftsman who put together a difficult to understand document.
That's true, and this document was put together by Westfield.
According to the certification?
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you a question about the excess or the judgment in excess of policy limits. They set it to a policy on page 74, and they interpret that provision as saying we'll pay interest within the policy limits, not we'll pay interest in addition to whatever judgment occurred within policy limits.
The supplementary payments provision, I believe, says they will pay prejudgment interest in excess of the policy limits, will not diminish the policy limits. And the principal judgment was approximately $1.8 million, so it was within the available limits of the primary policy and the umbrella. And so that judgment was within limits, and then the supplementary payment provision, unlike provisions in most of the cases cited by Westfield, which dealt principally with post-judgment interest, none of those cases had a pre-judgment interest provision like this that says we will pay pre-judgment interest in excess and will not diminish the limits. So if you have a judgment within limits, then this provision provides that when you add pre-judgment interest, the whole thing is covered under this contract.
Do you want us to remand the case for recalculation of the interest? I didn't understand that from your brief.
Why should we want you to?
It says it in your brief.
Because we think it was calculated too low. This is an appeal from a garnishment. It's not an appeal from a personal injury action. And I think we're probably entitled to 8%.
Cross-appeal that.
We did not.
Can we remand it for recalculation on that issue alone?
I think it's ministerial.
Ministerial? It increases your rights under the judgment.
Well, you're correct, Your Honor. That's correct. It would.
All 17.
All right. Thank you for your attention.
Sir.
And enjoy these policies that you're reading.
Thank you.
Thank you. In the last 2 minutes, I'd like to address a couple of things. Getting back to Judge Richman's point on the declarations pages for the individual coverage parts, those declarations pages that are dated December 14th, 2005, are Westfield's offer to renew RPS's coverage.
This is an offer and not a renewal, as it so states.
We have the face of the policy, Your Honor, and then the law telling us how to construe the policy under the law of contracts and the law of corporations. And on that declarations page, it tells us the effective dates of the policy. So the policy was not even going to incept until December 10th, 2006. And those declarations pages are issued in advance of that, December 14th, 2005. So those do not have effect until the policy, legal effect, until the policy incepts.
But it incepts the policy.
It sets as a matter of law on the day, the first effective date, which is February 10th, 2006.
So that date passed, so this policy incepted.
The policy incepted. However, before it incepted, the January 23rd declarations came out listing New Fern as the named insured. And to get to the point about the different coverage parts within the package policy, it defies logic that New Fern would pay a premium to be covered under the policy as a whole, but not under the general liability or the umbrella parts.
Are you saying the amended declarations replace the earlier declaration?
I'm saying that Martinez's decision tells us that they control as a matter of law because they are the later expression of intent, Your Honor.
Policy assembly instructions, Bates Stamp page 4 says, if it says amended declarations, insert the amended page on top of the last declaration page you received. And it doesn't say throw away the last declarations you received, as opposed to the other instruction, which says that's what you do with the renewal.
And I think in the context of insurance, the insurance policy is an historical document. And what I mean by that is these changes are going on. And I referenced earlier the endorsement that extended the policy's expiration date to February 20th, which was issued to New Fern Inc., not to RPS, for the policy as a whole. So the policy has to be construed as a whole. And then getting to the ambiguity question, Ms. Laliberte cites the DC Concrete decision for the proposition that you can use an ambiguity, to determine who is the named insured. But the Smith decision on which DC Concrete relied said, unless you're listed in the declarations, you have no reasonable expectation of coverage, and RPS is not listed.
It sure is listed on page 26. It sure is listed on page 17. It sure is listed on page 64. And Ms. Pavlik says at the top, this is the policy. What are we supposed to do with that?
I think we have the law telling us, as a matter of law, that the latter expression of intent controls, and we have the law of corporations telling us that there's a presumption that New Fern Inc. and RPS LLC are different entities. Further, we also have the policy language that says there is no coverage for any limited liability company that's not listed in the declarations, and the declarations in effect on the date of the injury were the January 23rd declarations. Thank you.
Thank you. We thank counsel for their arguments and briefs. The case will be deemed submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. Thank you very much.
Farewell, Judge Wolf.